You may want to be turning in your Old Testaments to the book of Ecclesiastes. The book of Ecclesiastes is where we'll take our study from this morning. And while you're turning there, I did want to say just one short thing about the lesson in the 11 o'clock hour. We're going to be discussing the subject of Calvinism, and there is a lot of material there. Typically when I preach, for example, or teach at a preacher's study down in the Waco area, I've done it a number of times, I try to prepare material, and the actual presentation of the material is secondary to the material itself. And I've kind of done that here, not so much because I don't want it to be important how I say it, but because I've got so much material, I'm going to be presenting it in a linear fashion so I don't impose too much upon your patience with regard to the time. And so what I've done is I've created an outline rather than just having some slides in the sermon preparation. Where you normally find the short slide handout in the back, there is an entire outline. It's a one-page outline, so it's fairly concise. But I would like to encourage everyone to have that with them in the 11 o'clock hour. I've made extra copies. And so if you haven't yet picked one of those up, if you will, make sure and do so before the 11 o'clock hour. We'll make an announcement at the beginning of the time then, because I think that it will be make it more understandable, and it will stay with you a bit longer. We have quote charts and other things that we're going to share with you at that time. So please take the opportunity to do that. In the lesson this morning, though, in the 9 o'clock hour, we want to talk just a little bit about the text of Ecclesiastes and one specific point that has been made famous by a song by the Byrds, actually, in Ecclesiastes chapter 3. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. And in chapter 3 in verses 1 through 8, basically, there are some couplets that are mentioned that we'll read in just a few moments' time. I want to start in Ecclesiastes 7, however, if you want to turn there, just a few moments. Because what we're going to be basically talking about is the importance of living a balanced life as we live our lives. Living a life of balance. And actually, according to the wise man here in the text, it may not be exactly what you're thinking. But there are some good points to be made, valid points to be made from this book of wisdom with regard to needing a life that is in balance, that takes care of the entirety of man. God created us and created our lives to be lives of balance. And of course, if we were to say the primary point at the beginning, that is that if your spiritual man is not taken care of, then you're not living a balanced life. There is an imbalance which comes as a result of sin and the fact that often sin is not dealt with. And so the first point that we're going to make, of course, is that finding a balance in your life can only be accomplished if you acknowledge God. And it's interesting that something along these lines is stated actually in chapter 7, beginning in verse 13. I want to read it, and there may be some aspects of this that are hard to understand, but we'll at least give you an overview of the idea. Beginning in verse 13, we'll go down through verse 18 of the text, verses 13 through 18 of chapter 7. He says, first of all, consider the work of God. I want you to think about that first, because that's the primary premise that is established in this particular section. Consider the work of God. God needs to be in the picture. God needs to be thought about as we talk about our lives. For who can make straight what he has made crooked? In other words, God is sovereign. God is supreme. God is omnipotent. God is the one who is in control of all things, so he should be considered. But then he begins to talk about things like this. In verse 14, in the day of prosperity, be joyful. In the day of adversity, consider. Surely God has appointed the one as well as the other, so that man can find out nothing that will come after him. I have seen everything in my days of vanity. There is a just man who perishes in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man who prolongs life in his wickedness. And then he says this, do not be overly righteous. Do not be overly wise. Why should you destroy yourself? And then, do not be overly wicked, nor be foolish. Why should you die before your time? It is good that you grasp this, and also not remove your hand from the other, for he who fears God will escape them all. Now you can see where the difficulty lies in understanding this passage when he says in verse 16, do not be overly righteous nor overly wicked. Because when you talk about being overly righteous, what comes to our mind? How can you be overly righteous? And of course, he is not indicating that we should in any way, any sense of the term, depart from what God requires of us. When we talk about righteousness, for example, we talk about the righteousness of Jesus, whom we are to follow and emulate, and his righteousness was perfect. He was a perfect man. But I want you to consider as well that Jesus himself took time off in the sense of recreating, in the sense of eating, in the sense of drinking, in the sense of enjoying the friendships of his companions. It was a favorite thing of Jesus, if you remember, to go to the house of Lazarus, who was a good friend of his, and he took meals with him. Now, those things went to spiritual matters. The spiritual welfare of man was what was first in his mind and his priority, but he lived his life as well. And there's something to be said for that. There are some individuals who actually can become a bit self-righteous concerning the fact that they're much more religious than other people because they are always thinking about those things. They're always dealing with those things. Every conversation is involved in that. And if someone else has the temerity to talk about something else, well, they're not being righteous like I'm being righteous. And what he's talking about is kind of an obsession. The act that an individual who does not live a balanced life, who does not include other things in his life, notice the language that is used here. He says, why should you destroy yourself? In other words, if you're not taking care in all of your life, you can become imbalanced in one direction. Not zeal, but obsession. Not righteousness, but an individual who is just so over the top with regard to things that it's not possible for him to take advantage of the blessings that God has blessed him with. And as such, you can actually just become so obsessed with things that you can destroy yourself. There are individuals, for example, who thought that the destruction of the flesh, self-flagellation, other kind of sacrificial aspects, that those things would make them more righteous when they really have very little to do with the indulgence of the flesh, as the Apostle Paul said. And so they erect for themselves strict procedures. The Catholic Church is something that has done this. There are a number of adherents to Catholicism that limit themselves from any interaction with the world, and 24/7 they do things that often are actually opposed to what God would have you to do and how God would have you to live your life. And I think that's kind of what he's talking about here. Because if you go over to the 12th chapter of Ecclesiastes, we find the final conclusion that is found in verse 13 of the text, the conclusion of the whole matter, that the most important thing that you can do is fear God and keep his commandments. This is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. So really, basically, what I would like to establish from that particular text is that God intends for us to enjoy the life that he created for us. That our primary, our first priority is to serve God, to keep his commandments, because if we've missed that, there is certainly no balance in life. But that there is nothing wrong with recreation. There is nothing wrong with family. There is nothing wrong with other things. Work, as an example, and an individual who engages in those things is not per se neglecting God. And in fact, that balanced life is something that is beneficial and helpful to us. And so there are a number of passages in the text which establishes that truth, but we'll not regale you with them. I do want to go to chapter 3 now and read verses 1 through 8, and I want to talk a little bit about that balanced life and how it is to be accomplished. So let's just read the premise that is found in those couplets that are contained in verses 2 through 8 of the text. Starting in verse 1, he says, to everything there is a season and a time for every purpose under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones. A time to gather stones. A time to embrace. A time to refrain from embracing. A time to gain and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. And when you look at the phrase time, you'll notice that especially in verse 1 of the text that the word time and season are used somewhat interchangeably. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. So it might be helpful to us to first of all note what those two terms mean. When we talk about the word season, it has reference in the Hebrew as a fixed and definite portion of time. A fixed and definite portion of time, a season. A season lasts. Now, in Texas, we don't have seasons per se, but in other parts of the world, there are seasons where there is a spring and there is a fall, a winter, and a summer. And that's the idea that's being established here. There's a text in Nehemiah chapter 2. You may remember Nehemiah, who became the governor of Judah in the rebuilding of the wall. And Nehemiah had asked of the king an opportunity to go and to help the people who were in Jerusalem. And so the king said to him in verse 6 of Nehemiah 2, the queen sitting beside him, "How long will the journey be, and when will you return?" And so it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. Now that word time that's used there is the same word that's translated season in our text. And so the idea was that Nehemiah, before he was sent by the king, he had to give the king a set amount of time that he would be there before he would return. He wasn't giving him open-ended permission to stay as long as he wants. And as you look at the example given of Nehemiah, he did return back to the king as he had promised that he would. And yet there is another idea of a time as just a moment, a general term that we use quite often. I want you to just look very quickly in our text, Ecclesiastes chapter 9. Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and beginning in verse 11, go through verse 12, where the wise man said in Ecclesiastes 9:11, "I returned, saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill, but time and chance happen to them all. For man also does not know his time. Like fish taken in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare, so the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it falls suddenly upon them." And that simply has reference to the fact that every one of us in life, we come across time, situations, circumstances. There's no fixed set aspect of that, but the fact that after a while, something happens to us. After a while, our lives enter into a particular phase, or the opportunities that we have change, or our commitments, or our obligations are different. Health fails. Injury occurs. Opportunity is given. That's what's being referred to generally from the text of Ecclesiastes chapter 3. A time for every purpose under heaven. And when we recognize what those times are, the seasons of life help us to remain balanced as we live day by day. And that's something that is indeed important. And so looking at Ecclesiastes chapter 3, we're not going to examine each aspect of these things, but understand these couplets are designed to be the opposites. And we all understand it. The one that comes to my mind is in that idea of a time to laugh, is verse 4, a time to laugh and a time to mourn. And so we weep, we laugh, we mourn, we dance. The idea is there is times in our life where there is joy, and there are times in our lives where there is sorrow. And this is something that we all have experienced, we all know is the case. So I want to spend just a few moments looking at the text of Ecclesiastes to find what are in effect three keys to obtaining balance in the life that we live. And the first one is found in Ecclesiastes chapter 8, if you would turn over there. Ecclesiastes chapter 8, we're going to read verses 16 and 17 of the text. Something that was frustrating to this wise man. Now remember, the writer of the book of Ecclesiastes was the King Solomon. There are some who dispute that. I have of a mind that that's exactly who wrote the book, and we'll use him as an example in the conclusion that we give you in just a few moments' time. But let's consider this wise man, a man who was granted wisdom from God. The life that he lived was experiential. this individual was someone who tried a lot of things. I think one of the blessings of the book of Ecclesiastes is that you don't have to try what he tried, because he already tried them and he found that most of it's useless. And that life that is lived without respect to God is one that is a vain life, one that indeed is lacking in balance, certainly, because you're not serving God first of all. But I want you to notice something that frustrated the wise man, beginning in verse 16. He said, "I applied my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on earth, even though one sees no sleep day or night. And I saw all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. For though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it." How many of us today become frustrated when we're looking for an answer and we can't find that answer? How difficult it is. Men have, from the beginning of time, sought, and they look in the wrong places for this, sought to know the meaning of life and why we are here. And men have been frustrated many times for those things. Now, that is an answer that we can grant and we can give. But there is much that we simply will never know. There is a limit to what we will be able to gain as far as knowledge in our lifetime, and other things that are simply inscrutable. Things that though we would desire to know, we're not going to be able to know those things. And what I want you to recognize is that that should not frustrate us in our lives. The first thing to note is you're not going to have all the answers. You're not going to know everything that there is to know. You realize that and we talk about movies, we can talk about books, we can talk about what young people, for example, express time to time. They'll say, you know, I'm going to take off a year or two from college, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that, because I've just got to find myself. I got to find out what kind of person I want to be, what kind of life that I want to live. And so they basically go and they just begin searching. And there is frustration to be found in that pursuit. It may be that someone finds something that fulfills them and that helps them, but others do not. They just don't know what they're going to do. And I understand the frustration that comes from those kinds of things. This is why ultimately he gives the answer there in verse 13, as we read earlier. To fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. The reason for our living our lives is to serve God. But understand this, there is going to be much that will frustrate you as you live your life on this earth. And I guess what we're saying, at least in part, is when we talk about a life of balance, is to recognize that that is the case, that you're not going to be completely and totally fulfilled, have all of the knowledge that you need. It's not going to reach any point in time in your life to where the frustration cannot be present. And so just learn, in whatever state you find yourself, to be content. To recognize that you're not going to find all of the answers that you're looking for. If the wise man here sought all of those things, one who had been granted wisdom by God and did not find them, we're not going to find all those answers to all the questions of life as to why, especially. The why questions, they are so inscrutable, they're so difficult to find. And so we need to be content in whatever state we find ourselves. And that is a real important aspect of finding balance in your life. Now, the second thing I want to note is found in Ecclesiastes chapter 5. If you'll turn with me there. Ecclesiastes chapter 5. We're going to read in just a moment in chapter 5 and verse 18. And so, when we talk about finding balance of life, this is something I alluded to at the beginning of our time together. God created you for the purpose of enjoying your life. There is nothing wrong with enjoying your life. Now, you do it within the confines of the Christian's life. In other words, there are individuals who will say, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. There is the old beer commercial, go for the gusto, because you only go around once in life. And so they will basically engage in excess, carousings. They will engage in behavior in which there is dissipation. You know, that passage that the Apostle Paul made reference to singing. Singing is edifying, singing builds up, but that excess, the use of alcohol and other things, those things bring dissipation, they bring perdition, they bring ruin to your life. And so there are individuals who feel like, you know, I'm just going to have fun, and they ruin themselves. They ruin their health, they ruin their relationships, they ruin their standing before God. They can ruin everything by those things because they think they're having fun. So we're not talking about that. But I do want you to note in chapter 5 and verse 18 what he says. He says, "This is what I've seen. It's good and fitting for one to eat and drink, to enjoy the good of his labor, in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life, which God gives him. This is his heritage." That means that God intends for you to enjoy the fruit of your labor, to enjoy the things that you can receive because of your money. When we talk, or what you have earned, when we talk about the fact that money is the root of all kinds of evil, the love of money is, not money. Okay? And not all evil, all kinds of evil. So what does that mean? That means that an individual can take money that is his, and because of that covetousness that caused him to gain these things, he utilizes those things. But not only that, but more primarily, that this love of money itself, the greed, the avarice, the idolatry of which is covetousness, are things that can destroy his life. But when we talk about making a living and being able, with the fruit of what we have earned, to buy a gift for ourselves, or a gift for our children, or a gift for our wife, if we talk about enjoying a house that we can afford to live in, or a car that we can afford to drive, as long as we keep things in their proper place, understand that God intends for that to be our heritage. We can't deserve or earn or merit our salvation, but there are certain things in life that we can earn, and that is, as stated in the text, our heritage. "As for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth and power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God." The gift of God. "For he will not dwell unduly on the days of his life, because God keeps him busy with the joy of his heart." There is nothing intrinsically wrong with those things. Again, there are individuals that think that the vow of poverty is something that makes me more acceptable to God, makes me a more righteous man, a more interested man in the things of God. And that's simply not the case. These, again, are things that on the surface have an appearance of helpfulness, but in reality, they don't help. What matters is what's on the inside. And if you gain things and possessions, well, you can't serve both God and mammon, so don't make those possessions and those things the center part of your life. Don't make them your God. But there is nothing wrong with enjoying what life has granted you, what you receive. It's your heritage. God expects you to do those things. And so enjoy life. But enjoy it not only with regard to getting stuff, but meeting your responsibilities, doing the work. You understand that the part of this particular thing that is often not emphasized, we say, okay, God wants me to have money. God wants you to work, is what God wants you to do. That's your heritage. In other words, you earn this. What do you earn? It's your wages and the things that you can do with your wages. Keep yourself busy. You remember that the Apostle Paul, when he was talking to the Thessalonians, he was referring to a group of individuals that were looking forward to the Lord's coming, and the way they prepared for his Lord's coming was quitting their work. So we're just going to wait for him to come. And basically, they were just sitting down and looking up at the sky and waiting for the Lord's return. When he didn't immediately return, what did they start doing? Gossiping. Started being busybodies. And what the Apostle Paul said, if a man does not work, neither should he eat. The idea is that God expects us to fulfill our responsibilities in life. There is great joy. Let's just set aside the material possessions. The fact that you have an opportunity to have a wife and children, or a husband and children. The fact that you have friends, that you have opportunities to enjoy one another's fellowship. That you enjoy everything that comes as a result of the life that we live here on this earth. And it's your heritage. That's something to bring joy. Ultimately, as we stated before, and we'll rephrase it again by going back to Ecclesiastes chapter 12. And we'll note in verse 8 of the text, starting off, verse 8 of the text. Ecclesiastes 12. As he comes to the conclusion of his entire book, he says exactly what he said in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, in verses 1 and 2. So the preacher, the one who was the son of David, said, "Vanity of vanities, all is vanity." And then at the very end of it, after all this experiential living, where he experienced all of these these good things and these bad things. And he talked about each of them as ultimately being vain. Life that is lived under the sun. Life that is lived without respect to God. Ultimately, it's empty. The only way you can have balance is if you put God first. And that is the most important lesson that we can share from this text tonight. And so again, you'll notice in verse 13, after he tried everything that he could try, he taught, verse 9, the people knowledge, pondered, sought out, set in order many proverbs. He wrote about what he had experienced. The words of the wise, he says in verse 11, are like goads. The words of scholars are like well-driven nails given by one shepherd. And then in verse 13, he gave his ultimate piece de resistance concerning his knowledge, his wisdom that he had gained through the life that he lived. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. That's ultimately the only way that your life can have balance. You see, the other things that we've talked about, most people are content, or a lot of people can be content even though they don't know everything. In fact, there are a lot of people who just don't want to know much other than what's around them. And they enjoy the life that they live, but ultimately they live lives of vanity because the lives that they lived are lived without respect to God. When the writer of the book of Ecclesiastes talks about a vain life, he's talking about life that is lived under the sun or under heaven. Those phrases are used numerous times throughout the book of Ecclesiastes. And what they mean is, if all that we're concerned with is what's on this earth, you know, God is not under the sun. He's above the sun. God is not under heaven. He is above heaven. And if all that we're concerned with is what this life has to offer, ultimately our lives have no balance at all. Because we are ultimately missing out on the one thing and the only thing that can balance everything else. I want you to think of a scale. We've got a scale in our house. Debbie likes old things. And this scale has weights on it. And as you put these weights on it, the scale comes out of balance. Just think about all of the weight on one side. God's not in the picture. Just think about how that scale is out of balance. And the point is this. As much as you put on one side of the scale, as long as God is first in your life and the primary import of your life is fearing God and keeping His commandments, no matter else what you gain, no matter the prestige, no matter the power, no matter the knowledge, all of those kind of things that are on one side, God balances it out. And your life is lived in balance. If God is not there, there is nothing else that you can put on that side of the scale to have a balanced life. Because the one thing that is most important in your life is to fear God and keep His commandments. This is man's all. It's our entire purpose. And you cannot have a balanced life without it. So, with that in mind, we draw our lesson to a close by noting one final passage from Ecclesiastes chapter 9. 12, in verses 9 through 12. We already read it, so I'll just make note of it. The preacher lived all this life, and he figured out the balance, didn't he? That's how he could come to the conclusion in verse 13. So he was wise, he taught the people knowledge, he set all these things in place. The book of Proverbs, talking to his son about what you need to avoid and how important wisdom is. And at the end of his life, what happened to Solomon? At the end of his life, I want to read to you a passage from 1 Kings chapter 11 and verse 3. Solomon had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines. And we are told in verse 3 of 1 Kings 11 that his wives turned away his heart. For it was so that when Solomon was old, that his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not loyal to the Lord his God as was the heart of his father David. So here is the wisest man who ever lived. That's what we call Solomon. Here is the one who had been given divine wisdom from God himself. And his life was a life lived in balance. All that he experienced, all that he learned came to the point where fearing God, keeping his commandments is all that man is about. And then when he was old, the influence of other people caused him to forget God and his life fell out of balance. Brethren, we can't allow that to happen. If it could happen to Solomon, it can happen to us as well. You need a life that is lived in balance. The gospel calls us to that balanced life of discipleship to Jesus. Balanced faith, values, character, and conduct. As long as we, unlike Solomon, endure to the end with faithfulness, maintaining that balance throughout the entirety of our lives secures for us standing with God for eternity. And that's what we want for each who are here today. We're going to offer an invitation at this time, not knowing your heart. If there is that need to respond to the gospel call, we call upon you at this time to come forward, to be baptized, to have your sins washed away. If you believe, that is something you may do today. We can assist anyone to answer that call. We ask you to come while together we stand and while we sing.